Welcome to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting from the Nationwide Live Studio at the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Dublin. We know that runners need plenty of carbs before a race. Bodybuilders have their protein issues. But what about golfers? Thanks to a movement to treat golf as a sport and golfers as athletes, experts have more to say than ever about what foods will turn those bogeys into birdies. Joining us now to talk about that is Ohio State University sports nutritionist Nicole Giantoni. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
Does diet really matter when we're talking about sports like golf?
Absolutely. Diet is a huge piece of the training nutrition, being a part of not only being out there performing your skill, but working on behind the scenes, what you need to do outside of the course. It's also huge in impacting your performance once you're on the course on tournament day.
Even when we're talking about a typical weekend golfer, a lot of times you have to wonder, is the stress that they incur from the game because their blood sugar's low, because they are drinking too much beer on the course, or something like that?
It's very important, even a weekend golfer, to pay attention to your nutrition outside of just that weekend game. It's about the entire week leading up to it, and then it's about the foods that you have before, during, and after. So throughout the course, you have to consider the energy that you're using while you're in the game, as well as the hydration that you're going to need to keep up throughout a warm day out in the sun.
A lot of people don't think golf is a particularly athletic sport. Can you give us a little primer on what is the athleticism of golf all about?
Being a golfer, you're going to spend enough energy walking the course. Even mental focus takes quite a bit of energy to support what you'll need for the game of golf. There's no question that it's definitely something to pay attention to.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting from the Nationwide Live Studio at the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Dublin. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the athleticism of golf and how nutrition, exercise, and psychology play a role in that issue. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guest is Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at OSU. You're a gymnast. You're captain of OSU's gymnastics team. How do the nutritional needs of a gymnast differ from those of a golfer?
For a gymnast, you're going to have a little bit more high-intensity, short bursts of activity. So you might be focusing more on quicker carbohydrates right before you go out for that sport. In a sport like golf, the activity is a little bit more sustained, so focusing on what would be appropriate for endurance nutrition. So here, while you're on the golf course, carbohydrates are just as essential for a golfer as they are for a high-speed athletic sport. But you'll want to focus on quality carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates that will last throughout the entire game, so that you keep that blood sugar high enough to give you energy and fuel throughout the entire day. So here you're thinking about things like whole grains, fruits and vegetables, things to take with you that will stay fresh throughout an entire day. Obviously, you want to avoid foods that are going to spoil, like yogurts or things that must be refrigerated, but pretzels, crackers, fresh fruits, vegetables, those can all be easily transported and will stay fresh throughout an entire game.
When a pro is out there, are they nibbling between holes? Do we know?
I think it depends on the pro, how important it is to them. Some athletes make nutrition a huge piece of their sport. Other athletes, it becomes a second thought. But I think, like you said before, there's been a great push to make nutrition part of every athlete's sport. So it's gotten a lot of more attention lately. Athletes have been trying to determine what kind of snacks can they keep with them, what kind of new sports bars are available, what kind of new sports gels or drinks or products are out there for these athletes, what can be easily transportable, what about flavors, what's going to avoid an upset stomach while you're out there in the middle of your sport. So I think it's got a lot more attention, and it depends on the individual.
Speaking of sports bars, I don't even know how to choose one anymore. It's overwhelming sometimes. What is your advice about what kind of sports bar to use?
Yeah, so sports bars can be pretty confusing. There's a lot of options out there. What you want to pay attention to a sports bar is, number one, determine why and when do you need a sports bar. So throughout a game like golf, having a sports bar available can be very handy. It's easy to grab. It's easy to take with you. But if you're at home throughout the day, a sports bar might not be necessary if you have access to fresh foods. So a sports bar is going to be a pretty compact, dense form of nutrition. You're going to be having carbohydrates, protein, and some healthy fats. So what you want to pay attention to in a sports bar that you choose, number one, focus on carbohydrates. You want about 25 to 30 for a good balance. Look for a complex carbohydrate. So see if there's a dietary fiber on that label. You want to look for about 5 grams of dietary fiber. And then also pay attention to the sugar. So anything that's between maybe around 10 grams, you want to pay attention to that number as well. But those carbohydrates are essential for keeping that brain working, keeping your muscles well energized. And then another piece of that sports bar would be the protein. So protein is going to give you some sustained energy and also protect all the muscle tissue that you're using throughout the course. Protein also slows down digestion as well as fats and fiber. So that's going to keep that carbohydrate with you a little bit longer throughout that course.
So 10 grams of sugar sounds like a lot. But in a sports bar, it's not.
It just depends. There's sometimes natural sugars that occur from fruits that might be in sports bars. So just being aware of that number and focusing, I would say focus more on looking for quality carbohydrates, good fiber, and quality protein, maybe around 10 grams of protein.
What about the energy gel packs we see so much of?
So energy gel packs, some athletes, this greatly benefits them because it's a quick burst of that carbohydrate energy. A lot of times you'll see runners with that gel pack mm-hmm. energy because it's quick to eat and it's easy to digest because it's already in that broken down form. Mm-hmm. So once it goes into the stomach, your stomach easily digests it. So it doesn't have to do the work of breaking down a complex carbohydrate to absorb it. If you're on the golf course, you might have a little bit more time, a little bit calmer of an environment where your stomach can work to digest something that's a little bit more complex of a carbohydrate. You may or may not need a gel, a carbohydrate gel. I would recommend more so a snack that has carbohydrates plus a protein to balance it out across the entire day.
Because that's one thing about golf. It takes a long time.
It does, yes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 MBR News. My guest is Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at Ohio State University. We're talking about what are you supposed to eat when you're a golfer, whether you're a weekend golfer or whether you want to simulate or you want to watch what the pros are eating. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the psychology behind golf. You know it's a head game if you play it, or maybe you know somebody and care about somebody who plays it, and you really wish they would come home in a better mood once in a while from a game of golf. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, because coming up, we're going to be hearing from Todd Kays. He's a sports psychologist at the Athletic Mind Institute and co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies. The weather on the course, we have beautiful weather today. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a little warm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not unusual with golf. Should golfers worry about hydration? Is it just a matter of bringing along a bottle of water, or is there more to it?
Hydration with golf is absolutely essential. On the course, you're going to be expending a lot of fluid, just keeping your body temperature well regulated. So just as general water guidelines, hydration guidelines, any individual should be consuming around 6 to 8 8-ounce glasses of water. So that's about 64 ounces of fluid. So if you see those 16-ounce water bottles, mm-hmm. that's about 4 of those in an entire day before you actually start on the course.
Before you even get out there. Okay.
Right. So that's just your body's natural hydration needs. Once you get out on the course, the environment plays a huge piece. So number one, the physical activity, you're moving, you're expending some hydration just to move around, but then also with the weather outside, today is a very hot day. We've got the sun shining, it's beautiful, but it will cause some fluid loss in the form of sweat. So wanting to keep up with that is hugely essential. So a good goal to keep in mind, try to think of over the entire day getting those four water bottles in, four 16-ounce water bottles in. And then maybe throughout the course, every 15 to 20 minutes, trying to get at about a half cup to one cup of water.
I'm sorry. Pardon me. We hear a lot these days about recovery foods for after workouts. What are recovery foods for after golf?
So recovery foods, the huge buzz right now is making sure that your nutrition complements the work that you just put in right after the activity happens. So a long day of golf, you're using up a lot of carbohydrate for that energy to fuel your muscles as well as fuel your brain. So you're using carbohydrate energy throughout the entire sport. You're also using some muscle tissue. So right afterwards, you want to be sure to pay attention to carbohydrate and protein as a recovery food. Along with that food, you want to pay attention to your hydration and electrolytes. So that's hugely important as well. So a common food that people have been promoting lately is chocolate milk. It has that carbohydrate in it as well as protein. Carbohydrate to provide energy back to the body, protein to supply some building blocks to rebuild muscle, and then it also has fluid within that to rehydrate the body, and then electrolytes to hold on to that fluid to stay hydrated.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting from the Nationwide Live studio at the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Dublin. I'm talking with Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at OSU. Coming up, we're going to get inside your head and talk about the head trip of golf. Been there and done that. Stay with us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm broadcasting live today from the Memorial Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club. Our thanks to Nationwide for loaning us their Nationwide Live studio at the tournament today. It's made it very, very pleasant. Golf pioneer Bobby Jones said a player may confuse concentration with worry, and a case of the nerves can undo the toughest competitor. We've covered the nutrition of the sport, and Nicole Giantoni is still with us. She's a sports nutritionist at OSU, but now it's time for the psychology of golf. Joining us now is the founder of the Athletic Mind Institute and co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies, Todd Kays. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Do you think golf is more of a head game than other sports?
Well, certainly it's has a mental piece. All sports have a mental piece, but golf, because of the time in between shots, it tends to be one of the more mental pieces, because you actually are only active on any given round, actually swinging the club, about 10 to 12 minutes. And so the other 3 hours and 50 minutes, or 4.5 hours, depending on the round, you're in your head and you're walking and you're thinking. And so it tends to be one of the more mental sports. And it's definitely one of those that you have to really tend to, one of those games.
We were just talking about nutrition, and there has to be a piece of the nutrition, has to be a piece of the mental puzzle too.
Absolutely. If I'm working with a tour pro, a college player, a mini tour player, all the way to an AJGA young player, you know, I talk about the nutritional intake piece of it, not that I have expertise in that, but the importance of that, because when you're coming toward the end of a round, and I track and I make sure all my golfers track how they do on the last three holes. And one of the common things that I see is for two reasons that they give up strokes on the last three holes. One of them being they start to think ahead and they start to think about score, which is probably the most common. But at times they get physically tired. And so if they're physically tired by the end of the round, they tend to make more mental mistakes.
Would you say that being mentally fit is more important than physical fitness for golfers, or are the two really part of the same equation?
They're all important. I think there's I have a model that I've developed that talks about the five areas that every golfer needs to develop. One is the physical, and that includes nutrition and fitness. Obviously, their skill development in terms of working with their teaching pros, and then certainly the course management side and how to play a course. It's more of a golf IQ that golfers need to develop. And then the final two areas are the mental side of it, and as well as the personal side. Most people don't think about the personal side, but much like these tour players out here this week, they have families, they have issues in their own lives that they're, you know, financial issues, family issues, and that sometimes can make it hard to bring their full concentration, and therefore this is their job. And in unlike other sports, there's no guaranteed contracts on the tour. They have to produce. They're not getting a contract like an NBA player or a Major League Baseball player where they're getting millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars just to show up. They have to produce, and if they don't for sure make the cut on Friday, they're going home, and it costs them money to be here.
And that's that thinking ahead part.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you have a question or comment, you want to talk about the head game of golf, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Nicole Giantoni, are there certain foods that maybe affect your mental, that affect how your brain works better than others?
Absolutely. Just like you were saying, being mentally aware throughout the entire game is critically important for a golfer, and nutrition is a huge component of that towards the end of the game. I was saying before, those carbohydrates, they affect muscle performance, but also that mental acuity. It's going to provide that quick energy for your muscles for your brain to make those quick decisions you need to make. Not only are carbohydrates essential, but also hydration is a major piece of staying in the game. First signs of dehydration is fatigue and loss of focus. So staying hydrated throughout the entire game is critically important, as well as having carbohydrates on the course.
With any of your golfers, Todd, do they ever give you a hard time that they're like, I can't eat while I'm playing, I can't, you know, they have these rules about what they can do and what they can't?
Certainly, there are some, like Nicole was talking about earlier, there are some players who do not like to eat, and they get in their routines, and I frequently just about front with them and saying, then you're not going to perform to your best. And I've done this for 20 years now, and I certainly have learned a lot by working with some of the highest level players, and certainly learning from them, and that they need to, can be simple, it can be a banana, it can be just making sure they're drinking water throughout, and they can do that. I encourage them to be aware of that if they're an AJGA player. Certainly caddies, I always tell them, make sure that your player,
of course, the overlooked caddy. What about that? No, go ahead.
The caddy is one of the most critical. I work with a lot of caddies to tell them to keep them mentally sharp out there, and different mental cues and reminders, because obviously the caddy is with them, you know, 24/7, and from, you know, hole one to hole 18. So they're a critical piece. Much more they're behind the scenes, but they're actually a critical mental piece at this level of golf.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting from the nationwide live studio at the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Dublin. We're talking about the intersection of nutrition and mental health when it comes to golf. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What does it mean to be mentally strong when it comes to the game of golf?
Well, there's different definitions, and certainly to keep it kind of more simple, mental toughness is a word thrown out, much like confidence in golf, and nobody really, everybody has difficulty defining that. But what I talk about with mental toughness is more along the lines of what's called grit, which is the ability to withstand the ups and downs of the game and continue to take the next step, continue to put the next foot forward, continue to come back, because this game, if you allow, will beat you up, because this is not a game of perfection. This is a game of who makes the least amount of mistakes on any given day. But every single golfer, no matter what their level, is going to make a mistake. And how do you manage the mistakes, and how do you overcome, and how do you bounce back from those mistakes? To me, that's how I define mental toughness, and it's something that we have to instill, and it's something I look for in the players that I work with.
And you have to do it in front of huge crowds of people. at the same time.
And some golfers love it. Some relish the fact that they can be and actually will play better in those conditions. They like being in the limelight. There's part of their personality likes to have everything put out there on the edge, and they want to be able to, and they're willing to put themselves out at risk. Now, and there's other players who unfortunately don't make it to the higher levels, not because they do not have the skill, it's simply because they do not have maybe the personality or the ability to truly maintain that mental toughness in high pressure situations such as golf. And it doesn't matter whether it be high pressure on the tour, the AJG events, when these young kids are looking to get into the college ranks, or these college players who are looking to win a national title, or, you know, certainly post-college, they're trying to make it on the tour.
You mentioned earlier when you got into this 20 years ago, this idea of working on the mental part of the game, it's relatively new, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, in the grand scheme of things, actually, it's been around. It hasn't been called sports psychology, but it's been around for about about 120 years, more from the physiological side. But it wasn't until 1988 in Seoul, Korea, that we, the United States, had our first sports psychologist there. So, and that's just not too many years ago in the whole scheme of things. So absolutely, when I've started in this field in the early 90s, it was definitely new, and we're kind of pioneering in many ways still the field in how it's trying to define itself. But absolutely, it's still new. What's exciting is all the advancements that have just been made, and I think the people in the field and what we've been able to do in 20 years.
Tell us about the advancements.
Well, certainly we know a lot more. You know, one of the things when we wrote Sports Psychology for Dummies, one of the key facets of that was to teach people how to train their mind. The mind is a muscle like every other muscle in their body, but nobody's really been able to teach them how do you relax under pressure, how do you focus when there's many distractions internally or externally. And so we've been able to develop tools and strategies that players can truly begin to learn at a young age and begin to apply and work that muscle. And then the other advancement is just in biofeedback and neurofeedback. We now know and can tell what's going on in the brain. One of the things I'm helping the Ohio State golf team set up their biofeedback and neurofeedback and kind of leading that up to show them what's going on in their actual brain, the left side, the right side, what's going on in their muscle activation, what is going on in their heart rate, their skin temperatures, that give them instant feedback about their mental state.
How open are players to that?
Much more than they were 20 years ago. I think one of the things that is very important and was one of my purpose in being in this field was to realize that psychology in general, but certainly sports psychology, it's a tool that you must use to get better. To me, it's about normal, healthy people using their mind to its greatest capacity. It's about getting better. It's about raising your level of performance in whatever you do. Obviously, I work with a lot of golfers, but many other athletes, business executives, but it's about taking your level of performance to the next level. You might be good, but are you maximizing your brain potential? Are you maximizing your mind? Are you maximizing your spirit? That's what drives me to help people perform better.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting from the Nationwide Live studio at the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Dublin. My guest, Todd Case, he's a sports psychologist at the Athletic Mind Institute and the co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies. Also with us, Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the physical and mental health of an athlete, in particular golfers today. So if you have a question, you can join us 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about the biofeedback. Nicole, did you use things like that as a gymnast?
as far as mental mental feedback, one thing that we did start incorporating as a team was speaking through your cues, what you're going to tell yourself in your routine, and it actually made a huge impact on our performance. So I'm a huge fan, a huge proponent of really training your mental capacity.
Tell me what you mean by that, speaking through your cues.
So when you're in a gymnastics routine, there's things that you say to yourself that can either help you or hinder you. You know, if you're on that beam, any wobble is going to set you up for the next skill in front of you, depending on how you respond to that wobble. Our coach was very in tune with training your mental performance here. And so we wrote out words to tell ourselves through the entire routine so we didn't have the opportunity to give ourselves negative feedback.
Like a script.
Exactly. So we would say, it was different for each person. It might be step, look, step, up. Very different for each person, but it gave you something to say, so you kept in that positive mindset and you kept on track through the entire routine.
Now, I know I do that if I'm going to take a swing in golf. I have mm-hmm. a certain way. I have to start it out, and I do talk to myself. Todd, is that something that is resonating with you?
Oh, absolutely. Nicole's right on. When your mind is always on, and so you want to be able to make sure you're speaking effectively to yourself. It's what we call the self-talk. And so you have those mental cues, and you have to be prepared for those because, again, like in golf, there's so much time in between shots that your mind can race to all kinds of things, negative, positive as well. But if a golfer comes off the hole and just had a bogey, you know, he or she is going to be thinking about that. And they need to have a mental process in place that gets repeated and becomes automatic because, again, their skill level is set. And much like when Nicole was competing, they have a certain skill level, but it's their mind on the day of competitions that's going to determine, do they perform to their skill level? Because then that's where all of the self-talk gets in hopefully working for them, but you've got to prepare that way. The ones who don't, you run the risk of kind of what I call the gremlins or the noise, the negative noise being in your head, which is going to change your physiology, it's going to change your swing, it's going to change your athletic movement. So you have to make sure on the day of competition your mind is ready.
It's about being in the moment.
Absolutely. One of the things that we talk about in mindfulness, and one of the things that is very important to teach, is how do you maintain presence over the golf ball? And that's one of the things that golfers at all level want to know how to do. How can I stop thinking about the shot that I just missed? How can I stop thinking about if I get in, you know, if I close out the back nine in a certain score, I'll make the cut, or I'll shoot my record best. How do we stay in this moment at this point in time? And that's where mental training comes in. It's not something you can just hope for, much like nutrition is not eating appropriately and hoping your body does what you want it to do. Same thing with your mind. If you do not train it ahead of time or prepare it ahead of time, you run the risk of mental mistakes.
Do some of your clients work with meditation?
Oh, absolutely. To me, when they're working with me, they're going to do it,
okay.
Period, because it's just a requirement. I have a lot of collegiate golfers coming into town this summer. We're specifically addressing mindfulness and meditation because it is so incredibly important, and the results show it. The results, whether it be, and the research shows it clearly, whether it be golf, whether it be gymnastics, whether it be stress levels of everyday working people in any profession, medicine or engineering, it does not matter. That mindfulness and meditation are critical pieces to well-being.
So when you see, you don't see it very often, but when you do see a golfer get angry on a course, they're completely breaking down at that point.
Absolutely. I see it often.
Okay. The most I watch is on television usually. Of course, I see it as just as a golfer. You see people throwing their clubs and things like that. And, you know, that's just stupid, but they do it anyway.
Absolutely. And what I try to teach my students and clients is that, how is that helping you? If you're getting angry, if you're getting upset, naturally, you're going to be upset. But what I talk about is the 10 steps or 10 seconds rule. So whichever comes first, you can be angry and upset. I mean, when I play, I get angry and upset. That's okay. But 10 seconds or 10 steps, whichever comes first, you've got to begin to transition to the next shot. Because if you maintain your anger, your heart rate's going to go up, your muscles are going to tighten, and it's going to make the next shot harder to hit.
10 seconds. Have you seen people, do you, when you see your the people that you work with, when you see them out there playing, can you tell what they're doing by watching them?
Absolutely. I've actually, one story of a collegiate golfer, I remember him taking, watching him in the NCAAs 2 years ago, and he was taking very long strides, which I thought was funny, and I asked him about it afterwards, and he had said, well, I wanted to extend those 10 steps as far as I could to get myself to calm down.
Yeah, I can see that. My guest is Todd Case. He's a sports psychologist at the Athletic Mind Institute, and he's the co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies. Also with us, Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at OSU, former gymnast for OSU. Talking about the mental and physical health of golf, golfing. For golfers, if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Wellness Wednesday will continue on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live today from the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village Golf Club. And thanks to Nationwide, we're in the Nationwide Live studio there. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about physical and mental health when it comes to golfing or just about any sport. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you have a question. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and we can get your emails as well. My guest is the founder of the Athletic Mind Institute and co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies, Todd Case. And also with us, with the nutrition end of it, is Nicole Giantoni. She's a sports nutritionist at Ohio State University, where she was a gymnast. Do you see golfers, athletes that you work with, Todd? Can you tell when they're sabotaging themselves?
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that I really pay attention to. So,
you spend a lot of time watching them play, right?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. A swing coach is going to certainly watch their mechanics, watch where they're, you know, are they swinging on plane. I'm going to watch for different things in golf. I'm going to watch for their facial expressions, their pace of play, their tempo, their speed of their club swing, how much time they're spending over the ball. Those are the subtle things that I'm working and looking at. Many times people say, wow, you have the greatest job. You can get to go watch athletes all the time. But if I'm not mentally and physically exhausted, by the time I'm done, like when I watch 18 holes out here this week, I will be exhausted because I'm taking notes and I'm watching all the subtleties to bring up with them afterwards. So absolutely, I'm looking just at a different aspect of how they're presenting themselves on the course.
And you really have to get to know the players and how they look and act on the course so that when you see them diverge from typical successful patterns, you immediately know it.
Absolutely, and that's why it's so important. Whenever I start working with a new golfer particularly, I want to go out and watch him or her immediately. I want to see them in the course so I have a baseline of what I'm seeing in terms of how they act on the course, how they go about their pre-shot routine, their warm-ups, to how they handle adversity on the golf course. I want to try to see that as much as I can. I do personality testing on them so I can understand how they're thinking more, so I can get a lot of information and spending a lot of time with them, you know, sometimes hours with them, to just try to understand what drives them, what their mindset is, what's their ideal mindset on the golf course. And then I can then give them more feedback quicker so they can make changes.
Nicole, when it comes to a team like gymnastics, it's an individual sport, but it's still a team. Do the coaches treat every member of that team a little bit differently when they're getting ready to go out there?
Like you said, it's an individualized sport where athletes are working at the same time, but it's very much about your performance. So a coach will be very mindful, paying attention to that athlete specifically to understand their needs for training. And I think it's very similar for golf as well, because it is such an individualized sport. You're inside of your head. It's all about your game. You want to have teammates nearby to support you, but it's about how well you can perform. And so a coach, a trainer, anyone who's working with that athlete will have to be very in tune with what that athlete's needs, and maybe some of their limits as well, to help them push just past their limits, but not maybe push them too far to where there wouldn't be any growth. So each person is very different in their training needs.
That made me think when I just heard Nicole talking, Todd, about the difference between working with a teammate from, say, you know, at the NCAA level and going into the PGA level or LPGA when it's an individual completely.
Absolutely.
There's no team.
Absolutely. A lot of times, even when golfers come to the collegiate level, it's hard for them because it's really not a team sport as much as people think. Nowadays, if a high school player wants to make it to the collegiate ranks, he or she is going to play in the summer tournaments, the AJGA tournaments. High school golf, in terms of a team atmosphere, is much less emphasized today, and that's not where college coaches go to. They look at their summer tournaments. And so there's a little bit of it, but when they transition, and if they're making it, you know, trying to make it on tour, it is a very lonely road because they are truly on their own and they are truly battling against themselves, and it is all, and it's money now. There's money on the line. It's their cost. They have a lot of cost to even play these tournaments to try to make it to the tour, and it's a very lonely road at many times.
We have an email from Mary. She says, my husband says he plays golf to relax. That's in quotes. This conversation sounds like he is using a lot of brain power and not relaxing at all.
See it all the time, that particularly the weekend golfers or the ones who really enjoy the game, they take it so they take it intensely, and instead of being focused. You can be focused and perform well. Like, if you want to play well, I want you to. If it's, let's say, a weekend golfer who wants to win their club championship, I want them to be focused, but many times they become intense. And in that word, intense, is tense. And I want them to differentiate those two things and understand that you're going to play your best when you're relaxed. And if you're getting so uptight about this, one is you have to learn to get into your ideal mindset, or two, you need to get some perspective, because if this is what's defining your mood in the house, I would say marital counseling is involved.
Joining us now is Columbus Dispatch sports reporter Rob Oller. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, Ann. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How many memorials have you covered now?
Oh, boy. I think mid-80s, maybe late 80s on, so I've lost track.
We've been talking about the physical and mental health of the game of golf and sports in general, and I was wondering, 25, 30 years ago, was that as big of an issue as it is today?
Not athleticism. I mean, you know, hand-eye coordination is central to golf. These guys are better athletes than probably they're given credit for, because they just have that DNA ability to see it, hit it. But look at Tiger Woods. He kind of revolutionized the game, weight training, fit. And he just, you know, guys from that point on, maybe 97, 2000, they've really gotten in the gym. It's about training. It's about, you know, staying fit, because, you know, it's almost strange to look back in the old days, guys with the paunch, you know, how did they hit the ball?
And core. They had no core.
They had no core, exactly. But they had the peach shape, no apple core, but the peach shape.
Right.
So, but they did it, and that was athleticism and hand-eye, and today you combine that with the core, as you say, and they're just hitting it farther, and it's just, they're better athletes.
Todd, we were talking about nutrition and how it plays with the brain. What about just physical fitness in general?
I mean, again, I go back to nutrition and fitness as being such an important part of confidence. A lot of times when golfers or athletes come to me, I always make sure that they realize that if you feel really good about your body from an endurance standpoint, that you can go out, whether it be and compete in a marathon or a lacrosse game, you know, for so many hours, or hockey or basketball, whatever it is, if you feel good about your body, and you feel good about what you fueled yourself with, you're going to have confidence. That has nothing to do with my area of of expertise. It has everything to do, though, with building confidence. And so I emphasize, particularly for golf, they need to be on a fitness program. Even the younger golfers now, they just believe in their bodies more. And certainly we know more. The science is very clear now. And so we know a lot more than we did 20, 25, 30 years ago.
Rob mentioned DNA. I mean, does that play? Are there just some people who something about them makes them better at the game of something like golf?
Genetics.
I mean,
Nicole's
tiny and she's got a certain physique for gymnastics. Is it the same way with golf?
You'll see many golfers, but you'll see golfers today. Sometimes you'll see how much more fit they are. And so that's part of the reason they're hitting the ball so much further than they did. Hmm. Plus the technology and the clubs and the balls and everything like that. There's a lot of aspects that go into it. But certainly you will see much more fit. They're getting around their spine a lot better, so their core is much stronger, so they're generating much more power. So there's a lot to goes along with the fitness part in terms of their actual ability to play this game.
Let's talk about yips. Yips are in the news lately. Rob, would you define a yip for us?
A yip is when you just have an involuntary reflex, I guess. It's with putting, and you sort of jab at the ball. You don't have a fluid stroke, and it's really between the ears, which we haven't talked a lot about. There's the physical fitness, and there's the mental, which I think is really what separates the guys on the tour, and that's DNA, too. You really can't teach the steel trap mind that a Tiger Woods has or a Jack Nicklaus had. They just have it. It's not to say you can't go to what they call, golf shrinks, for lack of a better term, and really get your mental state in better state, your mental game in better state. But yips is just, and it comes with age typically, it's just a mental thing where you just can't putt the ball. It's just not, the stroke is not even.
It gets
even.
Jerky.
It's
in other sports too, Todd?
Absolutely. You'll see it in certainly in golf, and there is approaches where you can teach them mentally how to calm down, and you can rid them of the yips. But you'll see it in baseball. You'll see it with a lot of first basemen and first base women, as well as catchers. You'll see it in those sports where they literally have difficulty, and they're playing at a high level, and they have difficulty throwing the ball. They get real fearful of throwing the ball. It's many times, if you can't address it, if I can't address it and we're not working through it from a mental, emotional standpoint, there are more interventions today from a neurological standpoint where they can provide medications that do seem to provide some benefit if somebody cannot get out of their head enough to calm down. But it's something that is so sometimes bizarre when you see it. Kevin Na on tour has kind of shown some of the yip type qualities or obsessiveness where he'll stop mid-swing because he's not quite ready. And so it definitely cuts across many sports.
Now, with gymnastics, of course, that's a very youthful sport. When do most gymnasts retire?
Really depends on the ability of an individual's body to recover quickly, and maybe how sport-specific you get at an early age. Many gymnasts start very young. They start training long hours most days of the week. They can be training pretty heavily, and gymnastics is a sport where there's a lot of opportunity for injury. So it depends on how well the athlete pays attention to that preventative intervention. So taking care of their mental acuity, taking care of their nutrition aspect, taking care of their fitness, putting in the preventative exercises to keep their body healthy, prevent injury. And I think the same is true across all sports, being sure to put in that preventative wellness. At this point and at this level in athleticism, athletes are looking for that next edge. And I think that's a huge component of it, is looking into how they can take their mental performance to the next level, how they can take their nutrition to the next level, how they can, on the front end of their game, really set themselves up for their best day of competition.
Rob Aller, Tiger Woods is hurt. Do you think, could it have anything to do with working out, with over? I would imagine a yip can happen if you pumped too much iron the day before or a few days before.
Well, that's an interesting theory, because there is one thought out there that he is worked out so much that the fibers, this is, gets really technical, the fibers in his forearms are contributing to maybe he hasn't putted as well, been putting mm-hmm. as well. I don't know about that. But yeah, you can, the more you use your back, you know, these guys put incredible amounts of torque on their back. So I think it's just use and hitting the ball, which is, you know, so hard, which is why he's changed his swing several times through the years. You know, he has thought this through. He's changed his swing to prolong his career.
Is that happening more and more, Todd? Are you talking, I mean, give, just, I would imagine there's a huge mental challenge when you're going to do something as fundamental as changing your swing.
Absolutely, and that's one of the hardest things. And all the pros have to make those determinants of when they're going to make their swing changes and how much are they going to compete during those swing changes. And it depends on the level of the swing change. Mm-hmm. And some will, obviously, we've seen Tiger and many of the other pros, they will back off for a few tournaments so they can feel more comfortable with the swing changes, because it is, if they do not trust their swing to any certain degree, a lot of times it overtakes their minds, and it unfortunately it puts a blanket, a negative blanket on the rest of their round. And when they're going through a swing change and they're still competing, I just make sure, look, there's a lot of the aspects of this game, putting, chipping, wedges, bunker play, mental game, decision making, fitness. There's so many other aspects you got to put your focus on. You can be an athlete and get this done. You can put the ball in the hole just right now. You can't just have this one thought that my swing is not quite right yet. You can look at other aspects to help during the transition of
but
making
the swing
changes. But my
putting's great.
Absolutely. Your putting needs, because that doesn't involve the swing.
With a lot of your clients, are you working with just sometimes one aspect of the game?
I'm primarily focused on, you know, kind of what I call the mental. And it's kind of the, you know, looking at, okay, how do I stay composed under pressure? And there is a lot of these players out here this week, they do have a certain amount that's already there. That's been there long before sports psychology was ever there. They were born with it, they developed it, they honed it. And what I do with them is more just tweak it, remind them different, help them expand their mind. A lot of times we refer to as shrinks, but I look at it as an expander. I'm trying to help them think differently and broader. And again, because I am a clinical psychologist, I know how much outside factors play a role. And so when their money is on the line and this is their job, they've got to be clear. And they want to have the minimal amount going on in their mind. I want them to be very clear, comfortable, and concise. And that includes things off the course.
You know, Rob Aller, we were talking earlier that the onset of just... of people like Todd Kays, who works with players on their mental approach to the game, is really only from 20, 25 years ago. It's pretty new. And then it wasn't embraced immediately by everyone. We were talking earlier about the physique. You said they're taking better care of themselves. They're healthier. Are you noticing that in the mental health department as well? Fewer broken clubs, fewer angry outbursts, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Sports psychology is just sort of... you're right, 20, 25 years ago, Jack Nicklaus, the old school guys kind of like scratch their heads at this, but it has really been a positive for today's players. There's so much stress, you know, the money has been mentioned, it's all amped up. Guys used to just kind of play, because Jack Nicklaus was just talking today about how he didn't play for the money because he made more, you know, from his, quote, real job than he did on the tour the first couple years. So they didn't have to deal with what they have today. And TV and the media and 24/7, it's just all on them. And just to be able to clarify in your head, clean that up. Sports psychologists have been a huge benefit to these guys.
Who do you think are the players, you think, from covering them, they have the best attitude about the game? They have the most fun, maybe?
Wow, the most fun.
Do you notice that?
Yeah, I think... You know, I would say, you know, Sergio Garcia is kind of famous. He can run a little hot, but he seems to have fun. Maybe not as much as he used to. As these guys age, I think things tighten a little bit. Furyk is a guy who is just getting back to wanting to have fun. He's struggled maybe the last couple of years and has come out this year and said, you know what, this is a game. I've got to think that it is a game and I want to have fun. Think back to when I was 10 years old. And so I think there's another guy. And I think the more you do that, the better you're going to perform because of that whole intensity that was spoken of, the tension and intensity.
That's right. It's a game, the game of golf. Rob Aller, thanks so much for dropping in and joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Rob Aller, he's a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. Todd Kays, thanks to you as well. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Todd Kays, he's a sports psychologist at the Athletic Mind Institute and co-author of Sports Psychology for Dummies. And Nicole Giantoni, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me today.
Nicole Giantoni, she's a sports nutritionist at Ohio State. Thanks to everybody for joining us today. Thanks to the All Sides crew for helping make this possible. My WSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French, Producer Michael DeBonis, Associate Producer Amy Jurevich. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.